Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along.
And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 242. It's going to be part two of the Pado Trail 50K that I ran back on April 30th in Pinckney, Michigan. And I hope you did listen to the first episode, or part one, where I pretty much described exhaustively, I think, how great my experience was with the people of Michigan. I really enjoyed my trip up there. This episode's going to kind of pick up where that one left off a little bit. I'm going to have a little bit more details of the race. I've got some audio clips, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about a little more in detail about my visit with Sandy and Eric, because it was just a great time. And then we ran into Dirt Dog, kind of a meet and greet, and he runs a Dirt Dog podcast. And we had a great time going out and having some beers and pizza and just talking, and just like everybody was old friends. It was just really cool. Stand by. I'll stick around for this show. I hope you enjoy. The audio clip should be pretty good from out on the trail. What I'd like to do is part of passing the time and run ultras is I like to, capture some audio clips that helps me when I get back home and put a show together, kind of, relive the experience a little bit and, reminisce in my own head how much fun I had or how much misery I was experiencing at the time. And so that's what this part two is going to be. And then after that, I will talk a little bit more about my time with Sandy and Eric, which was outstanding. Before I get into some of the audio clips and some of the more details of the race, I wanted to talk a little bit about a gentleman that I met afterwards named Lou Kidder. And Lou is very familiar with that course, and he's the one that was telling me that he thought it was each loop was more like 13.6 miles, and then the last one was shorter. And in some ways, that might have tended to have me think that that's why the last five-mile loop tended to go by real fast, although it still took me about an hour or so. But Lou is known up in that area because he is the husband of Karen McKeachy, who is a 63-year-old triathlete that was killed in August of last year up that way. Lou being an Olympic coach for runners, if I'm not mistaken, he seemed to know a whole lot about that path. And I did not know who I was talking with at the time. It was explained to me later, and I really thought it was cool. And I just wanted to mention that in the podcast. And he seemed to really be familiar with that recreation layer, and he's the one that said he thought those loops were a little bit longer. And I certainly wasn't in any kind of position to debate him because he seemed to really know the area. But it was an honor to meet him because I was told right after I met him when I got back in the car to go back. Marisa, after the race, she had to pick up her dog, and that's how things got a little mixed up. But we had to go get her dog that she had dropped off, and then that's when I met this guy, Lou, who was over at a house where the dog had been dropped off, and he's a family friend with this couple that we met over there, Doug and Nicole. So while I was talking with Lou, Doug had some whiskey shots there, and I was kind of cold, and so it was real good that I took that shot of whiskey. This was after I finished my dry heaving in the parking lot after the race, which has become kind of a regular thing of the finishing up an ultra. And I've just kind of resolved. I warned people around me. I warned my crew that this was going to happen after the race, and it did. But when I got over to Doug and Nicole's house for Marisa to pick up her dog, Doug had some whiskey, warmed me right up, and kind of set the tone for the rest of the afternoon there. So let's rewind a little bit and listen to some of the audio clips from the race, which I think you'll like. And there might be some commentary inserted here and there, depending upon what I hear at the race, what I hear during the clip.
Something I do for
at
fun.
Some point today,
and that's how
take
I met
a look at this stump.
Cool people.
If you've never seen the John Ragucki Memorial Stump right here on the table.
Why are you running? Like something
here,
good.
Actually. This guy's running his mouth. I want to get that on.
At 50 years old, he could run about 3 hours flat on the course.
So it essentially goes around this lake, or is it? Okay. Alright, so after it starts, ask, like this guy just brought his bin up here. So ask if there's an area for drop bags, a designated area for drop bags, and will there be a tent if it starts raining? If not, then let's just pick a spot Well, you'll be here when I come through the first time. Just pick a spot and say, Dave, this is where your stuff will be.
John Rogucki would have wanted that. If you're running 50K, your marathon splits the fastest of the day. And they always
say that. You got to
relax. Hey, look around here. The guys running the 50K.
Okay.
There's a couple of them.
Right there.
They're all yellow back here.
Timing crew ready.
They taking it of me?
The first mile, you'll walk a couple hills just because it's crowded. Like maybe four different hills.
Is that everybody? All right, see you in the emergency room.
So those were just some clips from the beginning of the race, and my trademark saying when I start an ultra is see you in the emergency room, because that happened at the first ultra. When I did my first 50 miler, I ended up in the emergency room with my feet halfway burned off.
All right, about 3.5 miles in, 40 minutes or so into the race. Very rolling hills, a lot of flats though, single track. Some mud, but nothing over the top of the shoe yet. So after I'm done with this loop, I'll have a good idea of what's in store for the next stage, and then add on that 5 miler at the end. A lot of people out here. It's gorgeous, even though it's overcast. It's not raining. Just real humid. And right now, I finally got it how I like it. Got about one person 20 yards in front of me. Nobody that I can see behind me. And there's a group about 50 yards ahead I can see through the trees. So once they get out of my sight, it'd be real nice. All right, just past the 5 mile mark. About 58 minutes. That will get longer. I'm just starting up a big hill here now. I'm really liking this trail, it's a lot of fun. All right, not quite at the 9 mile mark. For the first half, which is the 113.1 mile loop, I'm trying to do like 5 miles an hour. I figure that's reasonable. I've got support that's going to be at the 13.1 mile mark when we go through the start finish. And then the person has to leave. So I'm going to leave my gear. Okay, I'm at the 9 mile mark right now, just passing it. Hour and 48 minutes in. So the course is tough. I like it. Rolling hills. The second part of the loop is a lot more runnable sections than the first half. So I'm having a good time. And then another guy named Dave. He's doing the No Wimps Challenge, which is the 13.1 mile race on Saturday and then the 50K on Sunday.
All right, the No Wimps Challenge was you do the 13.1 mile race on Saturday and then you do the 50K on Sunday. And that did cross my mind going up there. I thought, man, if I'm going to go all the way to Michigan, I'm going to make this, make this a hard trip. I'm going to go up there. And I'm just going to, just do a bunch of mileage. But I kind of came to the realization that I was, visiting people, and I was going to be a guest in people's homes, and I couldn't be but so immobile, afterwards. So I knew I could handle 50K. I've only done, I think the only back-to-back, the worst I've ever done, I think I've done a 26-miler and then a 10-miler the next day. I guess I could have done it, but then there was also a part of me that was afraid that if I went and did the 13.1 mile race on Saturday and it was just so hard, and then I would be mentally going into Sunday thinking there's no way I'm ever going to do it. So I decided not to do that, even though it would have been a great thing to do. And if I ever return to that particular race, which the next time I go to Michigan is really going to be going up to Sandy and Eric's place and to do the back 40-40 or whatever they're going to call it, something like that. I think in the Traverse City area, that'll be plenty of mileage. So I decided not to do it. And when I mentioned how the second half of the first loop, or of the loop, was a lot more runnable, it was a lot of flats there where you could just kind of run the whole time. And then there were some huge climbs at the end. When I say huge, you know, it took a couple minutes to get to the top, huffing and puffing kind of thing. So that kind of clarifies that a little bit. And had great crew support at the end of the first loop. Did a powder job on the feet, sock change, kept the same shoes, got some food, and then headed back out.
All right, 10 miles, right at 2 hours. Didn't think I was going to get it. I doubt I can keep that up. I'll try. All right, 12 miles at 2 hours, 25 minutes. I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, I'm tired, but I'll be halfway done here within the hour. And that's a real positive feeling, talking to a few people out here on the trail. I'm digging this trail. I just finished one huge ascent. I mean, huge as far as being at the 11-mile mark. My fortunately, the trail mileage is ahead of my Garmin, because I forgot to cut my Garmin on. I think it's about 30 seconds off, so distance is just a little bit off. So I'll be done here about 15 minutes with the first loop. Get to my drop bag, see some familiar face, and head out again. All right, started on the second loop, 3 hours in. I'm almost at 15 miles. I'm not quite doing 5 miles an hour. We're like, I think 4 3/4. So I'm not too concerned about finishing time. But when people asked me what I thought, I was estimating 6 hours, somewhere between 6 and 6.5. So 6 being not possible, 6.5 being very possible, depending on how I'm feeling later. But 7 hours is really the goal now. These hills are killer. And the good thing about it is somebody just told me, met a lady named Tony. She said, the good thing about doing the second loop is after you do the hill, you don't have to do that one anymore. And I thought that was a real positive way of looking at things. So I just had a banana, had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So I'm going to let that digest for a little bit, and then I'll pick up the running. And I've done everything up to this point I've done without my iPod. So I think I'm going to put my iPod in for some musical distraction from being tired. And this is going to be challenging. I'm looking forward to digging real deep here in about an hour, hour and a half to 2 hours is going to be a low point, I think. And that I'll have to dig my way out of that. And that's why I come out here. All right, 16 miles in, 3.5 hours. I hit a little bit of a mini wall here. Not sure what happened. I think I'm a little dehydrated. I'm not sure how that happened, but, you know, when you urinate, sometimes you can tell. And so I'm looking forward to the next aid station for just some regular water. And I'm getting ready to do a couple less caps. Maybe that'll help pick things up a little bit. It's just sprinkling a little bit. It's a little bit of a breeze that kind of keeps things chilled a little bit. And I am now at the point where I see nobody in front of me, nobody behind me. I feel like I got the trail all to myself. Either that, or I'm absolutely in last place. I don't think I'm in last place, but somebody has to be, right? All right, hit the 18-mile mark. We're at 4 hours. 4 hours since the race started, 3:57 only. Garmin, for some reason, I don't think the race started. Oh, I started in a wave several minutes after the top guys left. That's why that math doesn't work in my head, right? All right, so 13 to go about. I think I can handle that. I'm really looking forward to getting in the second half of this 13.1-mile loop, because there were a lot of flat, runnable sections that were actually a descent. There was one long hill Well, there's a handful of little short hills, but there was one real long ascent. But then lots of flat stuff. I think I was able to make up a little time there. You know, even though I know I'm not going to win anything, I always try to, you know, race the clock in my head. There's some beautiful views up this trail of the lake, which is called Silver Lake. And sometimes you get up pretty high over it. Other times you're right down at the same level of it, and the trail's a little marshy. Really enjoying myself. Just a little bit of rain blowing in the air, nothing really of any consequence. And I think if it stays like this, everything will work out. It remains to be seen, though. The race ain't over.
So, yeah, I got into a little bit of a low point there. Kind of had to kind of peck my way out of that. And that's the term that I like to use because, to me, it's just a pecking. You do little pecks here and there. You keep walking, run a little bit. You walk, you get some water. What I did is I stopped at one of the aid stations and just stopped for like 2 or 3 minutes and just drank some water and just chilled for a little bit. And that was another peck. Then I got back out on the trail. And eventually, you get your mojo back a little bit. I knew that was going to happen. In ultras, sometimes you hit one wall. In 50 miles, you might hit two. I knew I was going to hit one. Sometimes you think it's going to be after 20. But for me, it was it came in early, before the marathon mark. But to my surprise, my crew was there when I got to the marathon mark.
All right, 22 miles, 4 hours, 50 minutes. It's about 12:23, started at 7:35, I guess, 7:34. Pain has set in, slow going. I think I'm looking at I hate predicting finish times because I'm really out here just to have fun, but there is an 8-hour cutoff, so I got to get inside that. I think it's been around 7 hours. Had a couple surges, got in a little dark spot there for a while. Kind of pecked my way out of it. Had a surge and passed some people I was talking to earlier, and they're gonna come past me soon, I'm sure. But you know, it's funny how you all of a sudden there's 9 miles to go. It's still hard, but this has just gone by really fast. I always thought distance running slowed things down. It's certainly a fast way to pass the time sometimes. Alright, mile 25, 5 hours, 29 minutes. I can't do the math, but I'm still upright and I'm still moving. I'm in pain though.
Alright, I think I got some of my commentary, my running commentary here as I'm producing the show a little out of order, but that's what you get with an amateur podcast. Can't spend but so much time editing things for everybody, but I do appreciate you listening. I really do. What happened was I had made plans at the beginning of the race for my crew not to be there at the marathon mark because there was a chance that my crew member, Marisa, was going to have to return to her house or to a place where there was a piano recital for her children that had been scheduled after I had been invited up and she had agreed to crew for me. Some people might think, well, you don't really need a crew for a 50K. Well, that's true. It is just a long marathon. But the offer was made, and it was very helpful to have somebody there to assist with my I got a plastic bin with all my stuff and a little backpack. Someone that kind of is looking for you when you come in, brings the stuff over to you, finds a place for you to sit down, things of that nature. So when I came in at the marathon mark, she was there, and it was great because I was able to get another powder job on the feet to protect the skin so I could make it all the way. It's always nice to see a familiar face. You don't feel like you're alone. It's nice to know that there's somebody there that's kind of looking out for you a little bit, and that's what happened, and it was just great. But boy, I was in some pain. That dissipated, though. I didn't feel that so much when I went back out for the remainder of the race. I mean, it just got to a point where you just hurt, and it stayed constant. It didn't get any worse. I didn't have any injury. I'm not injured here afterwards. So I was pretty pleased with that. It was just slow going, slogging through it. But that's how I do these things. I'm never gonna win anything. But to me, getting to that finish line is really the golden thing, and I ended up doing that. But I headed back out, and I was just thankful that my crew was there, and it worked out really good.
I cleared mile 28 and just wanted to reflect on a few things. There's really, this is a selfish sport, but there are so many people that make this happen. And I just came across a beautiful grove of blue flowers, and I don't know what these are. So what I'm going to do is take a picture. My phone is kind of frozen up. I just waste the time. I don't care about the time at this point. It's a beautiful blue flowers. You know, a lot of people make this happen for you. Your wife, training partners, people that host you in their city. And I've had a lot of people do that for me. And I mean, I will obviously thank everybody at the end. But, you know, here I am running and I'm listening to some Phantom of the Opera songs from the opera. And some of them are just kind of emotional and they kind of tug at your emotions a little bit. And so what happened was I started thinking about all these people that were part of making this happen. And, you know, it's not just me. I'm just very appreciative of the friends I have and the support from my family and friends. I guess first and foremost, the support from my wife, Monica, daughter. They let me do this crazy sport that, you know, ordinary middle of the pack, nobody. Just an obscure name in the results. But I do think I'm the only one from Virginia running this race today. I'm going to check that later. That'd be a first for me, I think. Maybe. I don't know. I don't even know. There's no way there's anybody else from Virginia up here. There's no way.
All right, so the next clip is really at the finish. What happens is the trail comes out of the woods, goes up this bluff, and then finishes across a big green field with, you know, ribbons and cones and stuff, with the lake to the left. Beautiful scene. And I had my device that was doing getting the audio was down in my pouch, so it's just a terrible quality. And I really recorded it just for me to reflect on later, which is really what the podcast is about. But it's kind of grown to include other things, so the quality's pretty bad. But I get across the finish line and I get my finish, and that's my 32nd marathon, which is a great thing for me, and I appreciate all the people that got me there. And just like that, it was over. All the preparation, all the training, double long runs on the weekends, travel plans, fear of the unknown, meet new people, fear of injury. You know, if you get hurt, you fall down, how do you get home? You know, if you break your leg, break your ankle, twist an ankle, sprain it. There could have been so many things that went wrong, so many things that could have gone wrong, but did not. And I'm truly blessed to have had the good health and the good nutrition, everything along the way, the assistance with everybody involved. As you could hear, I had a lot of reflection on that. That music from the opera, Phantom of the Opera, tends to do that to you. And, you know, I almost fast-forwarded through those songs that I had on my iPod, but they just kind of bring a little bit of emotion out of me when I listen to them because they're so beautiful. And I just wanted that to be a part of my experience, and I do weird stuff like that sometimes, put different things in my iPod, not just running music, but different types of music. And somehow it all came together, and when you think, when you start the race, you think it's going to be all day, you get to the finish line, and you can't believe how fast it went by. You know, the people you meet, talk to along the way on the trail, just, you know, little mini conversations here and there, people you pass, people that pass you. Little anecdotes here and there that just kind of keep to myself, because some of those, the words of encouragement along the way that were exchanged were just remarkable, and everybody I met in Michigan were very kind. And I kind of feel like I'm going to talk about it in a little bit, some bad news that I got at the Detroit airport when I got a phone call from my wife that kind of added to the trip. And I'll put that, not enhance the trip, but added to the whole emotional thing of the trip and the people I met and the people that were so giving of themselves. We got some news of someone from our church that passed. And so that became part of the experience, because I was still in Michigan. I was still making my way home when I got that news by a phone call. And I'll talk about that at the end of the show. So finished the race, got my wooden medal, got a pint glass, did a clothes change, sat around and commiserated a little bit with some other runners and thanked my crew. And did my dry heaving procedure, which is something that's become kind of staple for end of these things. And then got in the car and we continued on with the visit and made plans to transition to meet up with Sandy and Eric, and that was really cool. We met up later in an area called Royal Oak, which is where Sandy used to work, did a career there. Headed over to, sad to see Marisa go, but I'm sure there'll be another meeting again at some point in time, and then, because she and her husband and family were just wonderful, but it was so exciting to see Sandy and Eric. I mean, I have seen them before, of course, I've run a marathon with Sandy. I got to meet Eric. That was several years ago. I wish I could remember exactly when I met her for the first time in person, but she's been a listener of the podcast for a long time and just been a source of so much support, with running and ultra running and ideas. And, that's what makes the ultra community so cool, is that people are so giving of their time, and nobody's judgmental. There's no egos. It's those people get filtered out from my circle. I kind of filter those kinds of folks out. But Sandy and Eric are really genuine folks, and so seeing them was gonna be really exciting. And then we promptly went over to the Black Lotus Brewery in Clawson, and started talking. I told them about the race and how things went, and I don't know. We talked about running. We talked about plans for the future. Turns out Eric and I are eligible to retire from our careers in public service on exactly the same day and year. If that's, I just couldn't believe it. June 1st, 2019 is my eligibility date to retire from police work. And I'll probably do it. I don't know exactly what my future holds. Like I said, my life, at that point in my life, will go in a new direction. But visiting with them was really a lot of fun, and they have two dogs, and so we were excited. After we had a few beers and talked and just kind of got reacquainted, we headed out to their house in Rochester Hills, which I wish I knew exactly what direction it was from Royal Oak. It's close by. It wasn't far at all. Real nice home, and got to meet their two dogs, Kirby and Zuzu, and then promptly went out to take them out to play with them and get to know them. And it was really cool. It was a beautiful afternoon. And then met up with Dirt Dog at Antonio's pizza place, I think in Rochester Hills. And that was just really cool to meet Dirt Dog in person. I had actually got him to send me his video from his ultra some years ago. He did 100-mile or Burning River. And I got his movie from that, and I kind of felt like I knew him after watching that, and emailed with him over the years, because he does a podcast called Dirt Dog's Rambling Diatribe. I'll link that at ashlanddave.podbean.com, of course. And I'm also going to link to Sandy's blog, Ultra Freak. I think it's called Ultra Freak. It's called theultrafreak.blogspot.com. So I'll link to that too, because that there'll be a reference in a few minutes. I'm going to talk about this large oak tree that she that they showed me up there. That's I think 200 years old. So transitioning to another host family. Again, just overwhelmed with the hospitality, the kindness, just the. They just made me feel like I was so important. You're sitting there with Sandy and Eric. We're just the three of us at a table. And they're very important to me. And I felt like I was just as important to them. And so these long-distance friendships to me have become something that I've, I'm more and more interested in as I get older. And my it's kind of hard to explain. The hashtag hard to explain has kind of become something that it's not really a hashtag. I don't do that, but it's just kind of hard to explain sometimes in words what people's friendships have evolved into, and that's what Sandy and Eric have, mean to me. And they opened their home to me, and that what else, you know, what nicer thing can you do for somebody when you open your home to them and make you feel like they're part of your family for that time interval that you're there. And that's exactly what happened, and that's how I felt. I felt like I was a part of their family, talking with them, sharing a meal with them. The dogs are a big part of their lives, which is really exciting. And we talked about careers. We talked about personal stuff. We talked about runs, ultra runs, plans for the future. And, you know, the realization is that everybody is really just trying to make their way through, trying to make their way through the best way they can. While enjoying the company of other people. So that's what we did. We just enjoyed each other's company. And I can't say enough, Sandy, I know you listen. Eric, I think you might listen to the podcast indirectly. I'm not sure. I think you might do it through Sandy, but I know Sandy listens. And I just so appreciative. And just check your mail. I'll be sending a note up your way expressing that. But there's so much more to the story, as you know. I got a whole stack of stuff here, of course, and I'm still going through. And I really liked the race course. It was a good time. And when I say fun, you know, I came up there to have fun. I came up there to enjoy myself. Fun is a relative term when it comes to ultra running. Really, the fun and the great feeling is when you're at the end, of course, when it's done. But during the event, you find these moments of self-awareness and again, hashtag hard to explain. Sometimes they're just kind of they're best kept in your heart. And anybody out there that does long runs, that achieves things that they didn't think they could achieve, or they set out goals for themselves and then they achieve those goals, it's such a feeling of satisfaction and reward. And so when you do that in a particular area, you have an affinity for that area. So I did mine in Michigan. And so I am a fan of Michigan. I like Michigan. I liked everybody I met. I've said that numerous times through the two parts of this show. And so that's how I feel on that. We had some interesting times with at Sandy and Eric. Some of these are going to jump around a little bit. On my way back on Tuesday, I got taken in. Eric took me to the airport saying he had to go into work later. And Eric was working later that day because he worked in the evening. I got a little bit of a tour through Detroit, a little bit of a raw tour. If you've ever been to Detroit and you got a tour of the raw side of the city, then you know what I'm talking about. It's a little sad. But then we got into kind of the heart of things where I guess there is an upswing, Midtown, and then working our way into more of the, I guess, the business commercial area, the high-rise buildings, the stadiums, the hockey rink, baseball stadium, football stadium. That was pretty remarkable. I just couldn't believe how big the hockey rink building was, the new one that they're building there. And as a side note, we almost mistakenly went into Canada, but thanks to Eric, we managed to get out of there, which would have been a problem because we didn't have our passports. And Eric had something else in the car that wouldn't have been too welcome trying to get into Canada. Nothing illegal, just would have been hard to explain, I think. And I got, and then through spending the time with, Dirt Dog at the restaurant, which was the highlight of Monday night, we drank some Bell's, the Oberon, which, is carried in our local place here, which I think I might've already mentioned that in part one. I'm probably repeating a lot of stuff, but just seeing Mike was really cool because, I've listened to his podcast for a long time, for several years, and I kind of felt like I've watched his transition, some of his kids growing up, talking about his kids, his wife running. She actually ran every street in the town where they live. And so I asked him about that, and she accomplished that. He had apparently just run a marathon the week before, so we talked about that a little bit. And amazed by his accomplishments and how nice he was. And it was just really nice to sit and talk with him, somebody that I've known for a while, communicating over email. And I think there was one time a conference call we did on another podcast show that's no longer no longer producing shows. It was just real nice to talk with him. And he made me feel important, too. And so you always walk away with a great feeling of people that act that way. And I think it was genuine. Certainly none of it was contrived or anything like that. Running to have fun. One thing that I do when I go on trips or go to other people's houses is I take magnets with me, and then I leave them on the fridge in a discreet manner to kind of leave my mark on things. And, they're disposable if somebody doesn't want them on the fridge. And I have heard back from my first host family, the Brimhalls, and I haven't heard from Sandy yet. So Sandy, if you're listening to this now and you have not seen what I left for y'all on your fridge, hopefully you will check that and email me once you notice that. Let me talk a little bit about an email that Sandy sent me. We exchanged some emails after I left, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the Beeb Oak tree that means a lot to her, and we made a special excursion out. I think we went the long way back to their house so we could check out some of these things that they wanted to show me, which was, everything was really cool. One thing I've learned is that when you go somewhere else, that, and if you're the kind of guy that person that talks a lot and wants everybody to hear from you, which I'm that kind of person, I like to be the one that's doing the talking. I like listening too. But I have learned at my age now that when you go visit other areas, the best thing to do is just to sit and listen. And you learn so much about where you are, the people you're with, their hopes and their dreams, and the things that they think about, and the things that are going on with them. And yeah, a lot of the stuff compares to your situations, and it's so easy to say, it's just like so-and-so and so-and-so that I'm dealing with. Sometimes it's just best just to nod your head and say, yeah, that's really cool. And they just keep talking, and you get to listen and learn so much about their area, where they live, and the kind of things that they see in a different part of the country. And that is not lost on me whatsoever. And that's what I did. I just wanted to hear everything I could about the people I was visiting. And at this point in time, I was with Sandy and Eric and then with Mike at the dinner. So I just listened. Well, I got to learn about the Beeb Oak tree. And so Sandy told me about that. And so I'm going to kind of reference her blog here so the listeners will understand why that was so important to her. Sandy made a blog post on her blog, theultrafreak.blogspot.com, back on May 3rd, 2015. And this was about Grandma Beeb, it's a Grandma Beeb oak tree. And it's a tree. It's a giant tree near their house. And I couldn't believe how big it was. In fact, we used to have an oak tree near my house where I used to live. It was pretty big, but I thought it was big because some of the branches would go horizontally out for a lot. This was like three times the size of that. I was surprised how big it was. It's still alive. It's America's largest Beeb oak tree on record, and some people call the tree Grandma Beeb Oak. Apparently, the tree has its own Facebook page. But Sandy kind of likened herself to that tree, and she made a blog post about it, which I'm going to link to at ashlanddave.podbean.com because it's a long post and I can't recite it all here. But it meant so much to her that she wanted to show it to me, and that meant a lot to me, that because she compares herself to that tree, how strong it is, and she says her legs are like that Beeb Oak tree, that they get her to the finish of 109 races. And she wants people to get out there and do the impossible. And for this tree to be this old, which is I think she's mentioned something about there was some kind of a political situation where there was a thought of moving the tree or something. I remember we were talking about, I had several beers, so I can't remember exactly what all you said, Sandy. I'm sorry about that. But I'm looking at your blog post right now as I'm producing the podcast. And I think I get it. I really do. And that's why I'm going to link that post on the show, so nothing's lost in translation, and I get what you're saying, and I really do appreciate you sharing that with me. So, great visit with them, Sandy and Eric. We've already talked about that. Get up Tuesday morning, have a nice breakfast, and get the tour through Detroit. Get dropped off at the airport, get through security. And this is the sad part of the show, which I'm very sorry that I have to share all this. It wasn't anybody in my immediate family, but it was somebody in my immediate friend group. And Monica called me on the phone, and for her to call me when she knew I was probably in the airport or getting ready to leave or going through security, I knew something was wrong. I just felt it, and she was upset on the phone crying, and she said she had really bad news to tell me. Of course, I immediately thought of our daughter, and then thought of my mother-in-law. I knew that if something had happened on my side of the family, it would have been somebody calling me. I guess, I don't know, they could have called Monica. Because my parents are overseas traveling right now, and I've got some other, you know, family situations that you just don't ever know when you're going to hear anything. And anyway, it was a deacon from our church named Chip Pagnini who we're close with, and it just hurt. It just stung. And, you know, I got that news in the airport in Detroit, and so fast forward to today. Today's May 7th, and today was his funeral, and it was just, a real tragic thing. He died in his sleep he never woke up Tuesday morning. His wife did, and in the Catholic Church, you can have deacons who are married. They're not priests, obviously, but they're reverends. And he was one of our beloved deacons. So he passed, and that was the tail end of that trip. So my trip to Michigan was emotional in many different ways. It was very high. It was low, high and low during the race, and then I was leaving with a great feeling, and then I got this terrible news, and I came home with that terrible news, but it didn't diminish my feeling for Michigan. So in many ways, the whole trip was like an epic thing for me, and I felt like I was changed. So that's what you get this time around on the podcast. This is Ashland Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish, keep on running, and don't forget to hug your kids. Have a good week.